Hey, welcome to another episode of Impact Africa podcast by Faith Flows. My name is Vanessa Richard, and I am glad to be the host. My guest in this episode is Steve Harris. Mr. Ruthless Execution, as he's fondly called, is a trusted authority in the field of life and business and chief executive officer at Edgecution. Mr. Steve, I'm happy to have you on this podcast.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Our conversation on this episode is centered on something I consider important: practical steps to becoming a high flyer in the future of work. Now, the future of work is here. It is not 10 years from now. It's staring us all in the face. So, Mr. Steve, before this day, I had asked some young impact leaders that if they had an opportunity to speak with you and ask you a question, what would that be? One of the questions they sent in was, how did you go from being a school dropout to a highly sought after corporate sellout?
So basically, I mean, it's a long story, but first off, you know, thank you, Vanessa, for having me on your podcast and, you know, super, super stoked to be here. Answering the question about, you know, how did I go from being a college dropout to becoming, you know, some sort of corporate sellout? I think the long and short answer is, even though I did drop out of school, I'm incredibly educated about what I'm passionate about. I'm incredibly educated about what I'm gifted for. I recognize that a lot of people, in fact, everyone is gifted for something. They're wired and fired for something. You know, I tell people that, you know, fish don't take swimming lessons and birds don't go to flight school. There's something inside of you that naturally wires you to accomplish in a certain environment. And the long and short was, while I did gain admission to study industrial math at the university, that was never, to be honest, that should have been, that was an exercise in futility, because I had no business studying math. The only numbers I really care about are the numbers that people pay me. You know, that's all I care about. I don't care about Pythagoras's theorem or the algebraic equation. I don't care about none of that. I just care about how much I get paid. But I say this to say that if you want to be exceptional, you need to find that thing you are exceptional at. And it comes many times to you naturally. Unfortunately, for most people, the things that are considered exceptional by others are to them very simple and very basic, right? So growing up, you know, I've always had the gift of the gab. I've always been a communicator. My parents used to just complain, you know, incessantly that I talk too much, right? But that's what I do for a living. You know what I mean? I mean, now when I stand on stages and I'm speaking with so much, you know, gusto and confidence, the average Joe looks at me like, oh my God, you know, that is so hard, because the, you know, public speaking technically is second to the fear of death, and you do it so effortlessly. Well, that's because it's nothing to me. It's simple. It's basic, but it seems extraordinary to somebody else. Now, beyond finding what you're exceptional about or exceptional in, one of the things, of course, you must be able to do is to involve a lot of discipline and hard work. Right? I have an incredible work ethic. Now, even though, again, like I said, I dropped out of school twice, I'm my most difficult critic. You know what I mean? I am so tough on myself. I don't believe in ifs, buts, and maybes. I'm not going to give myself a hall pass, because I say to myself that, you know, if I could meet a version of myself, so giving you, you know, so right now, Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness is perhaps one of the biggest movies airing at the moment. And I think about it and I say to myself, if I could meet the Steve Harris from another multiverse, the guy who, you know, ate his cornflakes, ate his cereal, the guy who, you know, graduated, matriculated, the guy who did all the things he was supposed to do and, you know, got out of school. If I met that guy in some sort of multiverse, I want that guy to wish he was me, right? And despite how flawed I am, despite how imperfect I am, I sort of want that guy to look at me and say, man, I wish I had your life. Now, that other guy may have all the houses, he may be flying private jets and stuff like that. That's great. But I want him to look at my life with the sense of purpose, with a sense of focus and resolve, and like, man, I wish I had your life. And that's what drives me, because I don't know who I would have been if I actually matriculated from school. I don't know who I would have been. Maybe I would have been running for president in my country. I don't know. But because I don't know, I'm just going to push myself. You're laughing. It's serious. You know what I mean? So because, you know, I don't know. So I'm just going to push myself as far as possible, because I believe that, you know, yes, of course, with God's grace and everything, but you are the architects of your future, you know. And I think a lot of us, let me use this perspective. I believe that God is an architect and he shows us the blueprints of what our lives can be. And so he says, you know, he brings a blueprint and he says, this is what I want for your life. And he says, this is your life. This is what I see for your life. See, given us the blueprints and he's shown us the resources, gives you a vision. He gives you the blueprints. Now it is your responsibility to start building. Now, I think what happens with many of us is when we see the blueprints and it's Dubai, it's the Burj Al Arab, and we look at the resources and we look at the work that is necessary to construct this edifice that we've seen in our visions, in our dreams, we begin to settle. We begin to scrimp on resources. We begin to say, you know what? I don't know how I'm going to get to this Burj Al Arab type, but you know what? Let me just build a block of flats and just be managing that first.
Mr. Steve, there's something you said about you growing up and knowing everything you had to do. And this informs my next question, right? Every one of us, we have that innate potential and we're all gifted in one way or the other. But there is a point where you get to that you become highly productive and your potentials and your talent, you've been able to maximize them. That even the people around you recognizes that you've become productive. How can one get to that point? What are the step-by-step process to that point?
You got to surround yourself with people whose floors are higher than your ceilings, right? You got to surround yourself with people whose floors are higher than your ceilings. And I think sometimes that's the biggest problem we have, that we're not humble enough to recognize that we don't have it all together. You know, we go in our own strength, we go in with our own knowledge, which is great. But, you know, I tell people that if you're this, you know, the smartest tool in the shed, then you need new friends. But I mean, I tell people that, that if in your circle, you're a 10 and everybody else is a 6 or a 7 and naturally gravitates to you, then you've maxed out that circle, right? You need to get to the place where, you know, you get into a new circle where you are the lowest on the totem pole, right? Where you are an 11 and everyone else around you is a 20. And now it seems that you're the lowest on the totem pole, but it seems like you're starting all over again. But that's true humility, because that's how you grow. You don't grow by, you know, maxing out your circle. You grow by being the smallest in your circle, right? I like to work out from time to time and lift weights. And, you know, my trainer always says that, you know, the real growth in your muscle doesn't come when you find it easy to lift the weights. It doesn't come when you're doing the reps easy. So you're doing 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. That's not where the growth comes. The growth comes when you're about to fail, when you feel like you can't go anymore. That's when they push you to say, okay, now we start counting. We don't count when it's easy. We count when you feel like you want to give up and quit. And I think that's what we need to do. We need to surround ourselves with people whose floors are higher than our ceilings. So it challenges us to come higher. It challenges us to recognize that we might be inadequate or insufficient in some way, shape, or form, that we do need to grow that muscle. So yeah, that's what I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Steve. I think what I understood from what you have said is that it all boils down to finding the right cycle full of people who have attained the level you want to get to and have succeeded. And similarly, it's about finding the right mentor or getting involved with people who are not just mere friends, but they're interested in pushing you into the place of greatness, into the place where your capability shows forth and your productivity is heightened. Now, how do you find this right cycle of people or a mentor? I like to use myself as an example. Growing up, I grew up in an environment where you hardly find people that you can look up to say, okay, this person is going, or this person is at the point where I want to get to, I can follow this individual and I'm sure of getting to that point. So how do you get yourself into this cycle of people, find the right mentor to lead you to that point of productivity?
Well, I'll speak from my experience, and for me, it was serving. You know what I mean? And that's not a conversation that a lot of people are interested in, because today everybody wants to be, you know, CEO of me, myself, and I Incorporated, going nowhere fast, right? But service perhaps is actually what got me significantly, you know, to make a difference in my life. And that comes by asking, what can I bring to the table? You know, the Bible puts it this way. It says, can two walk together unless they agree? And, you know, give you an example. I meet so many people who, you know, send me messages and say, oh, you know, you've been a blessing to me. I'd love you to mentor me, or I'd love to breathe the air that you're breathing, or I want to be able to get to where you are. So can you show me the way? And when that happens, you know, of course, first off, you're flattered. Now, if you're like me, you're not very flattered. You know, you're like, oh, yeah, sure. Heard this once, heard it 1,000 times. And then one of the things I do, for example, is, okay, you want me to mentor you? That's interesting. In what direction? And most people are like, well, you know, anywhere, just anything, just take me by the hand and pull me to wherever you are. And service, I mean, it's a very, very brief story. I met one of my mentors, Fela Durotoye, about 18 years ago. And when I first met him, I was in a really dark place. I just, you know, dropped out of school, depressed, suicidal, nothing was happening. I wanted to know him and I wanted him to know me, but I didn't want him to know me because I was attending his events. I wanted him to know me because I was bringing value to the table. And so long story short, after attending a bunch of seminars where he was speaking, I started noticing that he didn't have any merchandise, because I would go and say, please, can I buy his CDs or can I buy his books? And there was no merchandise. And I would go to bookstores and I'd go to churches and I go, you know, this is a couple of years, this is like 18 years ago. So things weren't particularly online. And either people hadn't heard of him at that point, or they had, but they didn't have any merchandise. So I knew that even though he had a great message, he didn't have the merch. So what I decided to do was solve that merchandising problem. Now, I didn't have the skill sets, but I figured that this is a problem and I think I can solve it. So long story short, I went back to my parents' home where I was living, and I came up with a 12-page document on how, in my mind, we could sell 1 million of his CDs, or in other cases, help him make a certain amount of money. I can't remember whether it was 1 million naira, which was a lot 18 years ago. So it was either make 1 million naira or sell 1 million copies of your merchandise, which was not in existence. And long story short, I got another opportunity to meet with him. And this time when I met with him, I was prepared. And I remember saying to him that, because I had maybe like 60 seconds, and I said to him, I said, sir, you have a problem, I'm your solution. Because I knew I needed to get his attention. I was like, sir, you have a problem, but I'm your solution. So he was like, that's very cocky. What problem do I have? I said, you've got a great message, right? But as you can see, because we're at this event, you have no merchandise. There are no CDs, there are no books. And I think you're doing it, the people who love you, a disservice by having this great message, but we can't take it home with us. And I have a document here that I've created that I believe will help you sell 1 million naira worth of merchandise. Would you like to take a look at it? And of course, I got his attention. And after getting his attention, I got an invitation to his house, right? And when I got into his home and we sat down and we deliberated on the idea, long story short, he had no choice but to invite me into his business. And I started, I literally became the person who's responsible for birthing this idea. And inevitably I did. So his CDs, his merchandise, his books, I was very significantly involved in that project. So what am I saying? I'm saying if you're looking for a mentor and you figure that your mentors are busy, or you know, your role models don't have your time, they're not paying you any attention, ask yourself, what problem do they have that I can solve? What desires do they have that I can meet? I got a problem. I got problems. You know what I'm saying? You know, your mentors have got problems. They've got desires, right? And they're not going to tell you what it is because they're busy thinking about something else. But if you want to be able to get, I mean, forgive me for sounding spiritual, but, you know, Joshua was regarded as the servant of Moses, right? Yes. Elisha was regarded as the one who poured water on the hands of Elijah, yes. Right? So the value proposition of Elisha's mentoring, or Elisha's being mentored, was that his responsibility was to serve, was to pour water on the hands of Elijah. That may have not have been a big deal for Elijah, but it was important. That simple act was important enough for the Bible to record it. Joshua was significant enough that his service to Moses, that every time he was described before he became Moses' successor, was he was described as the servant of Moses. The problem is, many young people who are listening to this podcast and who live today do not want to be described as servants. You cannot serve if you're not willing to be called a servant. So that you know, that's my take on that.
This is great, Mr. Steve. I like to re-echo some of the things you've said. You cannot really go so far without serving and not wanting to be regarded as a servant. The individual you want to lead you towards your place of greatness has a problem, and you need to identify this problem and discover ways you can solve this problem in that individual's life, so that when you eventually meet this person, that you've admired from afar, you can present solutions to the problems he or she is going through. And by that, you become a valuable asset to this individual. Mentoring you wouldn't be that hard for him or her to accept to do. Now, moving on to our focus.
Practical steps to becoming a high flyer in the future of work. The future of work is here. It's not 5 years from now. It's here, staring us in the face. What are the practical steps that any young person, an adult, an elderly person who wants to reinvent his life or her life can take to become that high flyer?
One of the things that immediately comes to mind is you can't operate on instruction. You want to be a high flyer, you can't operate on instruction. You've got to go into the level of initiative. Right? You got to go to the level of initiative. I think a lot of employees today are caught up in instruction. So they will not move unless their boss tells them what to do. They're not operating at a higher level. I remember, you know, again, many, many years ago, you know, working with Philedro Toye and working in his consulting organization. One of the things that I took on as my responsibility set as a goal for myself was to bring in clients that, for example, that he had not been able to bring in. So at the time, he had done a lot of work with many corporations, particularly banks. And for some reason, we were not able to bring, at the time, Zenith Bank across the line. We just couldn't close them. And I decided that, you know what, that was the bank that I wanted to be the guy who brought in Zenith. Bank, even though I also brought in some other deals, but I want to be the guy who did what he at the time could not do. I just wanted it as my own personal record. And so long story short, I wrote a proposal, pitched it, and I wrote the proposal and sent it in. And then we were called for a pitch. And I felt like, oh, I've done my job, you know, hey, I've gotten their attention. All right, dude, let's go. You know, you're the closer. So you're gonna close. I'm just gonna come with you. And he said, you know what? I think you're gonna close it. And so he said, you know, I don't think I'm coming with you to this pitch. And I was like, no, I mean, come on, you're the dude, it's you, everyone knows you. Who's gonna listen to me? He was like, listen, you're gonna close the deal. And long story short, I headed to the bank. And I was afraid, because I was like, man, you know, if Fela was here, Fela would, you know, close this thing and da da da. Anyway, I got into the bank and was ready for the pitch. And I was meeting with the an executive director of the bank and heads of customer service and other departments. It was a really big panel. And then it was just me and one of my associates. And so I remember walking in, and the executive director said to me, well, I hope, you know, okay, you guys got our attention. I hope this is going to be worth our time. And I very cockily said, you know, I said to her, you know what they say, you never forget your first time, right? And she was like, cocky much. Then I walked into the presentation and I started my pitch. And as I started, Fela walks in. And as he's walking in my mind, I'm like, oh, fantastic. Thank God. Let him continue. Now, he didn't say anything. He just sat down and listened to me talk, right? And when they would ask a question that perhaps I didn't have the answer to, maybe because at the time my experience was a little bit limited, Fela would say, and what Steve Harris is trying to say is X, Y, Z, this, this, that. And he would just, you know, say, Steve, isn't that right? I'm like, yes, that's absolutely right. We later called it a Tom and Jerry move. So Tom would start, Jerry would continue, and, you know, back and forth. But anyway, long story short, you know, we got the deal. We got the job. Right. And I remember that the executive director was like, this perhaps has been the best presentation I've ever seen anybody do, you know, but I got the credits for bringing them in simply because I wasn't waiting to be told that we needed to close them or we needed to have them on our client list. It was something that I set as my personal goal. And it wasn't like, oh, you know, based on that, they'll increase my salary. No, it was just for the fact that I needed to be able to say what records exist in this organization that I can either set, or what records exist in this organization that I can break? You know what I mean? And that helps you, just because you want to be a high performer. High performers, you know, I tell people there are two paths. There's a path of frustration, or should I put, there's a career path, and then there's the accelerated path, right? 99%, I dare say, of employees are on the career path. And those guys are constantly waiting for promotion. They're the ones who are waiting on instruction. But the guys who are on the accelerated path, they determine their promotion, right? Because they're operating at initiative. They're not thinking like employees. They're thinking like CEOs, right? You want to be a high performer in your organization, you've got to start thinking like the CEO. What's the CEO thinking about, right? You are thinking about receiving your salary. The CEO is thinking about paying salaries. Do you think two of you are thinking about the same thing? You're not. You know what I mean? And I think that that's the problem. So many of us as employees, we're just going through the motions and we're doing the whole thing of, now my papa work is in my work. It's your work. I hate to break it to you. Anywhere you spend over 70% of your time and your life is your work. You may hate the place you work at, but guess what? Your life is there. You know what I mean? So it might as well be worth your while if you're dying to be there. You know what I mean? So that's one of the things that I recognize that most employees don't care about. And I say to people, again, paraphrasing scripture, that, you know, the Bible says that if you are not faithful in another man's work, who will give you your own?
Yes.
You know, and here's the interesting thing. If you are a crappy employee, you will not be an exceptional employer. You know what I mean? Even if you're a good employee, you're not even, that doesn't even help you make the cut to be a fantastic CEO, because the strategies are different. The mindsets are different. You're thinking about, oh, salary hasn't been paid. The CEO, the person who has a CEO framework, is thinking, how do I pay salaries this month? You're thinking about, internet hasn't been paid. The guy at the top, or the guy who has that high performance mentality, is thinking about it to say, what deal can I bring in that can pay 3 months of salary without flinching? You know, therefore I must negotiate the pricing, knowing that we have these running costs and this, that, and the other. So I think that most people don't think that way, which is why they will always be subject to, first in, first out, or last in, first out. There are certain people you just can't fire, and those people are high performers all day, every day.
Mr. Steve Harris, I must confess, this is a class on its own, and I'm making a lot of notes here. And you said something, you can't desire to be a high flyer and always be waiting for instructions. You need to get to that point of taking initiatives, imbibing the soul mindset where you're thinking and you're trying to solve the problems that the CEO or your leader has. And with that, you're now set to that company, to that place where you are, just like in your own case. Let's get down to discipline. Earlier, you spoke about discipline and how you apply it to yourself, even with the point where you have attained the strides you have achieved, right? How can we apply this discipline?
Discipline is incredibly important. You've got to put yourself through the rigors of performance. You know what I mean? I mean, think about it this way, that Usain Bolt, for example, goes to the Olympics and he sprints, right? He sprints for 60 seconds and he breaks a world record. He runs a 100-meter dash and he breaks a world record in under 60 seconds. But now here's the question, right? How long did he train for? He probably trained for 4 years, depending, let's say, for example, between one Olympics and the other, he will train for 4 years. But he trains for 4 years for a race that only takes 53 seconds. That is a level of discipline, a level of mentality, a level of hunger that most people unfortunately lack. We think that it's when the spotlight's on us that that's when we're going to show up. No, it's what you do in the dark. You know what I mean? So imagine being so disciplined to train for 4 years to only race for 53 seconds, right? So my point is, what are you packing? What are you packing in those moments when the spotlight isn't on you? And I think that discipline is incredibly important, because once they say showtime, lights, camera, action, you got to perform. And it's what you have practiced that you will perform. And yeah, that's the way.
Discipline is a mentality. It is what you do in the dark at the background that shows up when the spotlight is on you. This is a great one. Having the high performance mentality, but you're intentional about building it. All right, Mr. Steve, let me say thank you at this point in time. This has been a class of its own. And like they say, when you want to succeed, you need to climb on the shoulders of people who have succeeded. And listening to people who have succeeded is another way to succeed. And with everything that Mr. Steve has said here, you're on your way to success if you diligently apply them. So once again, thank you very much, Mr. Steve.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
Okay, so this is where we bring this conversation to a close. But I will urge you to please listen, subscribe, and share this podcast with someone. Someone in your circle, Steve. And you can be the channel to make that happen. And don't forget, I'd like to reiterate this, that Impact Africa Podcast is a production of Faith Flows. Here in Faith Flows, we're committed to bringing you the knowledge, the information you need to maximize your potentials. You need to get to the next level. And I encourage you to apply all of these. At the end of the day, you will be glad you did. We want to see that you move from the level where you are currently to the level where you envisage to be. And diligently applying all of these information, working out these strategies will make it happen, right? So do well to connect with Faith Flows on Facebook, Faith Flows Online, and also join Impact Space community at Impact Space, that's on Facebook. And to get more information and insight as to what Faith Flows is all about, do well to come in into our community, www.faithflows.org. Thank you again. My name is Vanessa Richard, and I will see you on the next episode.
Faith Flows is a nonprofit Christian organization. Support us today at faithflows.org/donate.